Of course, I gotta blow. I don't have any tissues on me. I gotta go blow my nose and stuff. As soon as I get Instagram here up, I'm gonna go grab myself some tissues and I'll be ready.
Gotcha.
But we're officially live.
Bring it.
Here we are, everybody. James Corbett here. We're with Ben today.
What's up, everybody?
Ben, you're a Navy vet, right?
Yep.
Man.
Different breed of sailor.
You know, we had a guy we did an interview with. It was so much fun. He was an older gentleman 2 weeks ago, I think it was. Mm-hmm. And he was a Navy vet. And he said, you know, I served during a time period where ships were made of wood and men were made of iron. So that was pretty fucking cool, man.
I heard legends about those guys.
Oh, man. This guy was dope. What's up, Instagram? What's up, Mark? Mark said, what's up?
What's up, buddy?
So I'm going to go do that thing. I'm going to go grab the
all right, gotcha.
Real quick, and I'm going to be right back, and then we'll get started, all right?
Sounds like a plan. What's up, Guy? What's up, Steve? I mean, Mark. What's today? Thursday. Yeah, that's all I got.
Right. All right. All right. So let's get this thing on the road, man. So Rocco is potentially going to join us from his house. You know, he works late, so you know, he overslept, which is totally cool. Was expecting his day to come. It's all good. He works hard for his family, works hard, you know, overall. So he absolutely gets a pass. So let me I'm going to add this thing real quick. Doing the sharing of the stream to personal stuff. So if everybody who's in here now can please share this, you know, that'd be great. Share it to your personal pages. You know, that'd be awesome. That way we can continue to spread the word of Project Refit and kind of what we're doing here and the work that we're doing. So let me see. I don't think that LinkedIn doesn't have an at everyone or whatever. Join us. All right. Talk to me, man. Well, who are you? What's going on?
Well,
give us the lowdown.
The lowdown. My name's just Ben. I did 7 years active duty Navy. Started off as a Navy cook. Then I became a Navy, a captain's cook for the Navy. And then I was fighting to make rank. And I pretty much signed a deal with the devil, as I call it. But to make rank, I found an opportunity to do an IA tour. And I didn't really know what an IA tour was.
Can you explain what that is, please?
IA is individual augmentee. And I signed up to do talk to the detailer to get off a ship. And then next thing I know, I got orders to do a PRT, a provisional reconstruction team.
Okay.
And next thing I know, I'm in combat training, and I was just like, hold on a second. I'm a cook. I'm not supposed to be doing this stuff. And next thing I know, I got an M4 in my hand. I'm in Camp Attlebury, Indiana, getting my butt beat with the 46 other Navy dudes, learning how to be pretty much a combat sailor. And it's just like, what's going on? By the 82nd Airborne, going through land nav, figured out what a gun turret was, what a 240 Bravo was, what a Mod Deuce was. And I was just like, what did I do? I'm doing this to make my E5. And I was just like, all right. And we got pretty much thrown into an attachment where there was Army, Navy, and Air Force. And we had a Army First Sergeant, an Army Colonel, and a Navy Commander, and a bunch of Navy Chiefs. And it was a challenge trying to get along different branches of service, because us Navy guys were used to the boat life. The Army guys are used to pretty much the sand and sandbox and all that. And the Air Force, they're used to the golf courses and stuff like that. So
right.
Not to judge us, but we all got thrown together as a unit, as a team, to pretty much become a family, because right. where we were going, we weren't ready for. Because we went to the Hindu Kush Mountains, a place called Nuristan. And our job was to protect local contractors that are going into these villages that are pretty much still in the Stone Age, teach them about irrigation systems, you know, wells, you know, how to, you know, electricity. Because these guys were just pretty much, they don't have electricity, running water in their little huts and houses. And the United States government is just like, hold on, let's bring them up to, you know, modern technology. But they didn't want that. So after got done with training, pretty much went to a place called Nuristan, was on FOB Kalagoosh, and that was a challenge. And sitting in a gun turret, going on missions, trying to protect these contractors that are trying to help these villagers, the Mujahideen, but they didn't want our help. So most of the time we got our asses handed to us. So I went from feeding a captain to combat just like that. And I was just like, what the? Yeah. So
when you say, hang on, Rocco's here with us. There's Rocco.
Hey, what's up, Rocco?
What's going on, man? Sorry I couldn't be there. I my overnights had me not go to bed until 6:30 this morning. I just woke up not too long ago. So
no, I got you completely.
So yeah. you were in the mountains and you're like on these combat tours. And only a couple of months before that, you were, I'm just trying to catch up here. You were a cook, you're a captain's cook, thrown into the shit. And it was only like a few months later that you were literally in combat.
Pretty much. They sent us to 2 months Camp Battleberry for combat training. And a bunch of PRTs. I think there's 36 PRTs coming together and they're going to different province in Afghanistan.
What's a crazy experience you had during your protection of contractors?
Just people losing their lives, you know, you're heading to M4 and you're basically babysitting these contractors, these right. engineers coming from, you know, America, they're getting paid six figures and we're playing bodyguards to these guys. And we're walking around, you know, pretty much doing a tripod around these guys. And we have two interpreters speaking with the Mujahideen, and then the contractor be like, hey, the United States is going to give you funding to do this to your village. And once they've 90% of the time, they're like, nah, we don't want your help. We don't want your help. And it's just like over there, 12, 10-year-olds walk around with AKs and they're pretty much taught to hate Americans. And this was back in 2009. So it was a culture shock.
Yeah.
We're living on a blackout fob. So at nighttime, walked around with either nods or a little red light. We didn't have running water. We just burned our own shit, burned our own trash. And it was just like, eight of us lived in a little hut and we had little huts everywhere and a little fob, and talk about culture shock.
Damn. What was the hardest part of that whole deployment, or do you just miss it?
I miss the brotherhood and the camaraderie ship I made. You know, they taught us how to do everything to go over there. They taught us how to pretty much defend ourselves, defend our brothers and sisters, how to keep everybody safe. But they didn't teach us how to come home. Because, you know, once you fire that weapon, you don't think about it till 2 days later at night when it's quiet.
Can you explain to me what you mean by that?
Well, you have a teenager, a kid holding a weapon at you. They fire a few rounds. What do? You bite the bullet or you fire back. That was a daily thing over there. And it's just like, no, too many, you know, that's why people come home from like Iraq, Afghanistan, Africa, all those places. I always say they teach you how to go over there. They teach you how to do this stuff, but they don't teach you how to cope when you come home. And that's the biggest challenge. That's too many demons, you know. And you don't realize it till you're in a quiet place or you hear like a car backfire or a train go by. And the next thing I know, you're just hitting the deck, hitting the ground. It's like, what the heck? And you're having a flashback like that.
What is the decision that you didn't make or did make that sits with you?
I made a lot of decisions.
What's the one though that comes to your mind immediately that you're pushing down right now?
The few times I had to fire my weapon and unalive somebody, you can say. It's just, you know, you think about that stuff and you don't, you know, it's been about 13 years and you still can remember that day like it was 5 seconds ago. The faces, the noises, the people, the smells, the atmosphere. And it's just like, no matter how much therapy you go to, how many people you talk to, that stuff doesn't just disappear. You can't lock that stuff up and throw it away. You can't erase it from your mind.
Why do you feel like, so some guys, when they talk about combat, and it's usually actually from the infantry perspective, it's like, 'cause they signed up for it. Do you think it affects you a little bit differently because it's not what you signed up for?
Pretty much. I didn't really know what I was getting myself into. You know, you think about PRT and they give you a brief rundown, provisional reconstruction team. You're going to go over there and help them reform, rebuild, you know, bring their country back up to, you know, society, bring them up to, you know, the 20th century. And they're like, sweet. And then next thing you know, they don't want us there. They're just like, what are you doing? We hand out little radios, wind up radios to the kids and stuff. They learn how to make them to bombs. And next thing I know, they're planting them in the roads. They're planting them in the ground and we're walking over them. You know, people are losing their legs and their limbs. And it's just like, but they don't understand. It's their culture. They're, you know, they were raised, a lot of them were raised to be like, these guys aren't good guys. They're going to do something bad to us. And we're over there trying to prove that wrong. And it was a culture shock. And it's just, I wasn't ready for it. Like if I knew what I was going to get into, I probably would have stayed on the ship because I was in the USS Kearney or took orders to another ship or something like that.
Yeah. Damn. Okay. So it was really like I guess the decisions that you made were pulling the trigger to protect yourself, and you really, killing has affected you in particular pretty heavily. Why do you think that is?
It's just, and I grew up hunting and fishing, and it's completely different, you know, taking a life. I was in Nuristan province at Fob Calagoosh. Somebody just asked. But,
yep. Come on, brother.
But I don't even know. It's just, and it's not more about protecting me. When you're on a mission, you're out there with 6 different vehicles, about 20 dudes. It's all about keeping them safe. You know, you don't want, you sleep with these guys, you eat with these guys, pretty much 24/7, these guys are like your new family. They're your brothers, your sisters, your mom, your fathers. We're all there together. So you pretty much, I don't think I ever really cared about me. I cared about the dudes next to me. And that's more what I pretty much gave a crap about. You know, once you get that bond.
Yeah. Keep going.
No, once you get that bond and that brotherhood, it's just like, this is my new family, you know. You want to keep, it's like keeping your family safe at home.
Yeah.
And this is our home, even though we're in the Hindu Kush Mountains. This is my home. I'm living in a little bee hut, sleeping on a cot with 8 other dudes with curtains, you know, surrounding us with sandbags all around us. And it's just like, yeah.
Was that the happiest you ever were?
Pretty much. Like we didn't have cell phones over there. So we had a tiny MWR. It's a little tiny building with 6 computers, and half the times they didn't work. We had one phone that we had to share with 146 dudes. And when stuff happened, they shut all that stuff off. So we couldn't call home. We couldn't email home. And we got mail twice a month. Our mailbird got shot down twice. There's a picture on YouTube. It's pretty bad that the pilot survived, but we're looking forward, you know, doing incoming mail. Everybody's excited. They go to the little helipad, and next thing you know, copter comes down, see mail going all over the little flight line, and then we get indirect fire and mortared, and it's just like, man. And then you forget about those letters because we look forward to those letters, and you're just like, these are Russian dudes, but how do we get them out? You know, they're somebody's family. We got them out of the chopper. They survived. They're hurt, but it's just, and then a day or two later, that's when we're like, oh shit, our mail, you know.
So they were Russian?
Yeah, they had these Russian helicopters that delivered us mail.
Wow.
Yeah.
Isn't that fucking wild?
It is wild. And it's just like, because when we spoke to the guys a few times, we brought them out like chow because we had a little tiny defect. And we brought them chow sometimes and they thanked us. And it took us a while till we figured out who they were because they didn't speak much English.
Damn.
So it was just like out of all places. But then you look at Afghanistan and, the, you know, the demographics, Russia's right there.
Yeah, it is. Yeah, it is.
But they flew in out of Bagram and then Bagram to us. And it was like a 4-hour flight. So
there you go. Here, we have a couple of comments here. So one guy, Austin, on Instagram, he's like, once we got home, everyone was expected to be fine. Coping with the deployment was drinking and chasing that adrenaline rush we got in the firefights. When our guys would fuck up, they would get hammered. So, like, meaning getting drunk and shit like that. I imagine this is in response to the, were you happiest when you were over there? He said, simplest form of living in the raw sense. You know, and I guess that means, like, that's also when he was probably happiest, too. I think he's resonating with that. And then Wade, he said, it was hard for me to justify the violence onto another human being, but I remember I had other human beings to protect. This is something that took me a long time to figure out. I find that to be pretty deep, only because Wade was actually an infantryman as well. He's actually one of the few, infantrymen that I've talked to that, has an issue with the violence aspect of it, which isn't, that's a net, net, that's not talking shit on him at all.
No, I understand that completely.
Yeah, yeah. Wade's a fucking savage. He's a stud, 100%. But he is definitely one of the few guys that I've talked to that was an infantryman that, you know, has had trouble with the taking a human life, which, and for guys who don't struggle with it, that's okay too. Like, it's because they knew what their job was. They knew that was literally what they signed up to do, was to fight. And to take lives. For you, you didn't sign up for that. And it totally makes sense why you'd struggle with that. You know, I almost think in my mind, with that, you know, for you in particular, I mean, is there something else that sits in your head? Like when you think about taking a life, I mean, what is the thing that sits with you heavy at night? Like what are you thinking? Remember your answers here, be as honest as possible, because there could be other people watching this now and or in the future that can resonate with you. So be really honest.
I don't know. When I first came home, it was like, I don't know. When I first came home, I became violent, went through a divorce like that, fighting to see my kids like that. And I became addicted to antidepressants because when I came home, I became really violent. I remember getting picked up and then thrown to a Desron unit. And when you guys don't know that, when your command is deployed, you get thrown to a Navy base and you pretty much, this is your new, pretty much command to your command comes back because they're deployed. And I was in Army ACUs wearing the Navy patches. I was in the Navy uniform and I just came back home and I remember they start drilling me in uniform inspection. I was in the wrong uniform and I blacked out. I dropped the E6, and next thing I know, they call them MAs, Master of Arms, your MPs. Next thing I know, I'm getting tucked, handcuffed, hogtied, and thrown into a little cell because I just lost it just for somebody screaming at me going like this because just I was in the wrong uniform. So then,
why do you think you were so violent in that instance? Like, what actually was setting you off? Do you know?
Set me off. It took me a while to realize that. Lots of shrinks have pretty much talked to me. It's pretty much once yelling started over there, once noises started over there, that's when shit hit the fan. We got our asses handed to us. We start getting shot at. They start, you know, shooting RPGs at us. Thank God they sucked with their aim. Because 9 out of 10 times we just watch them zing by us. But by then we're, you know, locked and loaded and ready to go. But, you know, when somebody starts screaming and yelling at me, I just had a flashback to fight or flight. I had no weapon on me. And I just went crazy and I dropped an E6 and I guess I was choking them out, but I just completely just blacked out. I just remember being pretty much hogtied, cuffed, thrown in the back of a, I don't remember that. I remember getting out of the Navy squad car on a Navy base and then pretty much going into a little cell for, I guess they said it was about 8 hours before I saw somebody, but it seemed like, I don't know, like 5 seconds, but those 5 seconds are 8 hours. And I was just angry. You know, I just don't remember much. I thought, the enemy got me, but it was Navy people. And I was just happy it was the right Navy captain that spoke to me afterwards. They realized, what's that?
What do you mean by that? The right guy?
Well, when they brought me out of the cell to tell me what I did, I went right in front of a Desert Run commander. It was a captain, and that's equivalent to your Navy or your Army colonel.
Okay.
Same rank, because the rank's a little different. And he goes, what the heck? And he realized I came home from a combat place. And the E6 in the Navy was sitting there telling him how I lost my cool and I pretty much dropped him and almost unalived him. And then next thing I know, they took me out of cuffs. And next thing I know, they're escorting me to a hospital. And I'm sitting in the hospital waiting to see a doctor and waiting to get like pretty much committed. So if I met the wrong Navy captain or colonel or pretty much anything, I probably would have been locked up and got a dishonorable discharge or something. But it took, you know, the right guy, and I think God had something to do that with that. The right captain being like, hold on, this guy just came back from combat 24 hours ago. What the F? And you drilled him, and you start screaming at him because he was in the wrong uniform. And then, bam, it's just, so I just thank God for that every day, because I could have switched everything, you know, like that.
Do you find that spiritual path has helped you at all in your life?
Recently.
Why? Can you take us through that?
Recently. Well, pretty much when I moved back to New York a year and a half ago, I came back to where I grew up. I don't really have much family back here, and I told myself, I give up. I came back here to die. I'm like, this is where I grew up. I got one good friend back here that I grew up with, and I'm just done with my life, and I'm pretty much done. And I found the perfect place to do it. I failed at unaliving myself a few times in the past and been committed before, but pretty much I was just ready to go because I lost everything again for a second time. That's why I came back here. My friend pretty much reached out to me and said, hey, come back to where you grew up in the mountains of New York. You know, I'll help you get back on your feet. We'll do this, that, and the other. And I just told him what he wanted to hear. I stayed with him a little while till I found a little cheap apartment, till I found a job. And then I was just trying to plan it. And I was just like, I'm done. And then pretty much it took a homeless person cussing me out, because I remember walking around downtown Albany. Pretty much drunk, and a homeless person came up to ask me for a few dollars. And I said, I don't have a few dollars. And they told, and she started yelling at me. He goes, you know what? You need to find fucking Jesus. If you find Jesus, Jesus will tell you to go get fucking money and give me some money. And I was like, what the fuck? Remember that? What? Dude. I was like, what the hell? And then I remember that. And I don't remember the much after that. But when I woke up, I came to, and then I start emailing churches, and I was just, and a church reached out to me and say, hey, come join our service. And I went to that church for a few months, but then it was pretty much, I don't like to knock people and knock churches, but it wasn't for me, because I start going to a little group thing. And then next thing I know, the whole church knew my whole story. And next thing I know, the judgmental people were talking bad about me. And I was just like, hold on, this is supposed to be the house of God. And now I'm getting judged because I'm starting to open up about the horrible things I did.
Right, right.
So then I stopped going to church, and then I was just back on to, all right, you know, I'm done. You know, my kids are like in their late teens, early 20s. They don't want nothing to do with me unless they need something.
Yeah.
And it's just like, I've been through like 38 jobs since I got out of the military. I've been through a lot of failed relationships, and it's just like, what's the point anymore? You know, what's the point? So I was back on to, you know, I'm just ready to call it quits. You know, I lost a few battle buddies to suicide, and, you know, a few other people died from VA pills. They gave them the wrong VA pills and their heart exploded. And it's like, these are my battle buddies and they're all dying off. It's just like, there's no point. You know, my family judges me for my past, and it's just,
what do you mean by that? What do you mean by, okay, so let me give a quick example before you answer.
Gotcha.
A lot of the time when I've noticed a pattern, I did it myself for a while, where like you would think that the world is talking about you and the world saying this, that, and the other, when in reality it was all up in your mind. And
it is not 90% of it's in your mind.
Yeah. Well, I'm not trying to be cliche.
No, but it's true. Cause when I start going to another church recently,
yep.
And I realize, well, actually they said 98% of it's bullshit and it's in your mind.
Yeah. Yeah.
And the other 2% is factual. And those are judgmental people that they're pretty much angry at themselves or life.
Exactly. So
they feel better about putting you down or putting somebody else down. Exactly. And they try to one up you at all the time.
Yep. Yep. So when you say things, are you still in a state of, cause it sounds like you are, and again, please be honest. That's what we're
here. No, I will. Yeah.
Ego has no place at Project Refit. We say that all the time. That's why it's on our homepage. So when you say those things, are you still in a place where you kind of like your voices in your head are louder than, let's say, you know, Rocco or I?
Sometimes, you know, and it's pretty much most of us veterans are guilty of isolation. And sometimes when you're in isolation, the voices overtake everything, you know. And that's like the biggest thing. But it seems like the more I go to this new church that I just discovered, the more the family that I am developing with this new church, it seems like those voices are starting to disappear little by little. You know, the ego is starting to disappear. And it's just like,
yeah.
And it's just, and it's a different kind of fellowship. It's a different kind of brotherhood. Because all my military buddies, we're scattered all over the states.
Yep.
You know, my closest ones in Florida, my battle buddy, he was a corpsman in Afghanistan with me, and he's the closest one. And, you know, he's trying to get me to come back to Florida, but I hate the heat. But he's like a brother, a father, and I'm the same way to him.
Yep.
You know, and that's like the best thing for us. But yeah, the ego and the voices are just, and the VA just, they just want to keep writing these scripts. It's just like, I talked to a mental health provider once a month for about 30 minutes over Skype. And their first questions are, all right, are these pills working? No. You want new pills? All right. Do you want to die today? No. Is anything triggering you? Okay. You're good. You don't want to die. Have a nice day. And if you tell them you want to die, they're like, all right, report in to see somebody. And next thing I know, you're getting locked up. And then, so no veteran's going to tell them the truth, you know, once they realize what's going to happen. And the VA system is just, there's some VA clinics out there that are good. And then the rest is just the funding. So it's like the lowest bidder is taking care of us. And it's just like, take these pills and forget about your stuff and take these pills. You don't have nightmares and you're pretty much drooling on yourself. Mm-hmm. What's up, Rocco? I saw your lips moving. I didn't hear you.
Oh, there you go. Go ahead, Rocco. Go ahead, Rocco.
I was saying that's because the military is mostly a checked box. It's a system.
Pretty much.
They don't feel.
Pretty much.
One of the big things I genuinely think of when it comes to the VA and such, I mean, healthcare ran like a post. Actually, yeah, Ray. Right on. Ray and I have talked about that before. It's healthcare ran like a post office, you know?
Pretty much.
It's really difficult to separate the checked boxes or the systems that are in place separate that away from the person so that a person can be a person. But then again, that's the point of having shit like Project Refit, you know what I mean? And I really believe that is the difference between like the experts in the system and like and things like a Project Refit and others and other nonprofits that exist out there, even VFWs and such, right? Where, you know, you can find people actually love you, you know, cause that's what's missing, you know, like they're doing their job and they're trying to do their job to the best of their ability. but it is a system. They have thousands of other people to look after. And the VA as a whole has millions of people to look after. It's very hard. It's difficult, right? So, you know, that's why having something like this where, you know, we show up, we help out, we show you that, you know, you are loved and you have a place where you can find that love again and that brotherhood in a way. It's never going to be like combat. It's never going to be you back with the fucking, you know, in the middle of where you were at Hindu Kush, you said?
Yeah, the Hindu Kush mountains in the middle of
You're never going to fucking, you're never going to have that again.
I know.
That's okay. The thing is, you have to decide for yourself. And I think not just you. I don't want to just like pick on you and just say you're the one talking right
no,
now.
No, you're good.
Like, a lot of guys, man, like you got to find a way out and get back home and find a new community. You're never going to find that again unless for some fucking reason we end up in some skirmish out here in the United States, which I hope never happens. You know, I hope you never have to experience that shit again. You know what I mean? I really do, because that means something wrong. Real wrong is going on here at home. But, you know, it's just trying to find that new mission and that new community. And it sounds like you're really making an effort to do that now for yourself. And I'm really, really happy that, you know, you're finding that even in a place like, you know, you're going to church. That's great, dude. Like you're finding it in a healthy community and a healthy church. You know what I mean? Like that's because there are different types of communities and churches and places that might not be healthy, but sounds like you are. So
yeah, it's this new church, and it's pretty much, it's weird how I found this, because I was pretty much back to, I'm ready to end it. You know, I got nothing. My bank account's negative every month. You know, I got a truck that's barely trucking anymore, and I still owe money on it. And it's just like, I'm not where I want to be. And I'm just like, how am I going to get to where I want to be? And I'm just, you know, you lose hope. And on social media, I saw this guy, this pastor, pretty much saying at their church is pretty much an hour away from me. So I almost didn't even attend, but I heard a message where he was doing a series on the series called Survival, and how regardless of what you're going, come as you are, the broken, the sick, the hurt, the depressed, pretty much just keep swimming. There's a reason why you're breathing. Just keep swimming. And I heard that, and I was just like, what? I'm like, this is a church? And I went to the church, and people are dressed like this. It's a non-denominational church where everybody pretty much, you come as you are. They don't want the ego people. They don't want the rich. They don't want the wealthy. They want the broke, the sick, the people that are pretty much destroyed. And they just want to teach them that you're not alone, fellowship, and teach them about pretty much, you know, what he did for us.
Right.
And once he talked about surviving and how you're not alone, then I start, you know, thinking, I'm just like, this feels nice. It feels like I just came home, and there's other people around me that are dealing with, you know, being raped or being jailed for, you know, things or drunk driving and everything in the world, you know, that they're suffering from. I'm suffering from a different reason, but you come together as a family, and the suffering is just helping each other survive.
Trying to have some camaraderie.
Yeah, pretty much. And that's what, and it's been a few months, but it's pretty much, I joined a few groups. And then if I miss a group, they're blowing up my phone, be like, hey, we're thinking about you. We love you. We're your family now. And it's just,
and it's
nice. All different ages, races, backgrounds. And it's just like, and it's just nice. And that just happened recently. So it's starting to give me a little more hope again. I'm not thinking about, you know, all those times that just, I blacked out from taking so many pills or drinking. And I woke up in the street or passed out in the woods somewhere. And I'm like, how the fuck did I get here? You know?
Yeah.
It's just too many. And you know, I'm 43 now. So it's just like my family's always asking me, you're 43, you're in debt. You don't have a home. You don't have a real job. It's like, and then they remind me of that. And it's just like, that's why I live 1,000 miles away from my family now, because I don't want to hear that every day. Because when you hear that every day, then the voices in your head just keep telling you you're a failure. And it's just like, ouch. You know, I love my family to death, but then at this church, you learn how to love them from a distance. You know, they're still your family, but, you know, you can be 1,000 miles away from them and be like, hey, happy birthday. Hey, I love you. Hey, I missed you, but I can't, you know, I'm going to stay here for now.
So what are you doing to, because you said something really important. You said that you're home now, right? And here's why that matters to me. There's a great book that many of us read when we were in school when we were younger, The Odyssey. Remember that shit?
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Right? So The Odyssey, there's also this book that it's a, I think it's a Navy vet who wrote it. excuse me. It was a Navy vet that wrote it, I believe. And he was definitely a Vietnam vet. Might've been Army. Anyway, it's, the combat trauma and the trials of homecoming. And it was written like two decades ago. And this guy basically, he made an argument on how the whole Iliad and the Odyssey is actually nothing but the journey home for that captain, right? He was actually home in Greece the whole time. However, all the different people he met, like the Sirens and the Cyclopses and all those different, they were actually just examples of people that, you know, the Sirens, for example, are sex workers and things like that, right? The Cyclopses are, you know, people who are, because they were drinking and shit. So he's in the bars all the time and getting drunk and stuff like that. And he was actually home the entire time, but he wasn't there.
Exactly.
It was actually just a shadow of himself that was there, and he wasn't truly fully home. And I think that it's important that you actually now feel like you're home. You're back home in the United States again, and you're like, whoa, I'm actually here. And you found some type of semblance of grounding. Now your family's saying things to you that are hard for you to take in because they're telling you the truth. And you know, things like, yo man, like what is going on? Like, why don't you have these things yet? Like, why aren't you? And it's hard for you to voice them because I'm thinking about people dying fucking every day.
Yeah.
Right. And you're like, they're not thinking of how you're struggling with the fight of taking someone's life every single night that you fucking try to go to bed. Right. They don't recognize you. You wake up, probably feel, I'm getting the vibe from you that you feel like you're a fucking piece of shit when you're not, you know what I mean? Like, when you say something like, you said it out loud. You said, they keep reminding me of these things that I haven't done yet. It means in your head, you're like, they keep reminding me that I'm a fucking scumbag. And it's like, but you're not, dude. You're a fucking warrior. You fought. You're literally a soldier at this point. I know you're Navy and shit, but you were fighting, right? Like you did things you didn't sign up for, and you're still healing from it. That's okay. You saw the worst of the worst. And that's why you have to have shit like the VA. You have to. That's why you have to go to this post office, healthcare ran like post offices, because you don't have the job to, you know, supplement that yet. You know what I mean? Like that's all real shit, bro. That's the sacrifice you made for me, right? That's a sacrifice you made for Rocco. That's a sacrifice you made for everybody. You know, but it is true that you need to love yourself more right now. And that's real shit. And before you can properly give and receive love. That's right, man. Ray, I'm going to read the whole thing out. So love them from afar because you need to love yourself more. Until you love yourself, you cannot properly give and receive love. That's real shit. Wade also said, brother, I am in recovery myself. The problems of yesterday will fade in time and experience. We have two choices in life's lessons. We learn from them or we let ourselves burn from them. You keep fucking going, stud. So you have guys here who understand what you're going through straight up. And the thing is, man, like, and Gina, she's a civilian saying like, and for me and my family, so grateful for you and your sacrifices. So there are a lot of people in America who really give a fuck what you did, right? They really do care. And the thing is that your family's also right and they're not wrong. They're not.
Yeah.
Genuinely not. And it hurts to accept the truth of that. But the thing is, man, like, you're doing your best right now, I think. I don't know if you are. Only you can tell us that, actually. I just said that because I want to make you feel better. But to be honest with you, I shouldn't have said that.
No, you're good. You're good. It's reality, man. It's reality. It's,
right. I'm not trying to fucking blow smoke. So I don't know if you are genuinely doing your best. Only you can tell us that.
I'm getting there.
I appreciate that answer. So you're not fully giving it your all. You're working your way up to it. Okay.
About out of 100%, I'm probably about 25% there.
That's good.
From what I'm hearing, it sounds like you've been living life uncomfortable, and then you found this this community and this church, and they're slowly but surely bringing back your confidence. And like, just from listening to what you have been saying, to where you're at now, that's what it sounds like, and that's what we preach here at Project Refit, right? Is the camaraderie. That's the way to get out of the self isolation. That's the way to heal most of your head. And like, I love that you said that you're getting there, because I can definitely see it. I just wanted to mention that. I think that's really honest and really brave.
It seems like, and it's just like the brotherhood of this new church that I found that's 60 miles away. It's just like not the same as the brotherhood I had in Afghanistan or in the military, but it's a different kind of brotherhood.
That's right.
And all it takes is a few people, older people, young people, whatever, just to say, hey, let me hear your story, or hey, how are you doing today? Or I had a bad day, and then they tell you they had a bad day, and then you click out of that, you know, fight or flight thing and be like, how can I cheer this person up? They made me smile 2 days ago.
Let me share something with you about that right there. And we're going to pause on that. What you just described is service and how important service is to your healing. I love to say now, it's the best quote I've ever heard about men in my entire fucking life. It was by Ayn Rand. She's like, men are sacrificial animals. So what that means to me, what I've learned is that, oh man, no wonder men feel so good when they're serving and doing something for other people, because we're sacrificing ourselves for others. It is the greatest feeling when you can sit there and see that your sacrifices have done something for others and genuinely has made a difference. And that's why you can find yourself through service, which is why it's so important to continue service. You know, even after serving, right? To continue doing something in your community for others, because genuinely you have to flow with life. I mean, that's what Ray was even saying when he's saying, like, let that shit flow, like your feelings, and you know, all of it's fleeting. All glory is fleeting. It's one of my favorite quotes by Steve Jobs. It might have been said before him, but I know Steve Jobs said it, and he was saying that in response to getting one of the highest honors for being known as one of the greatest entrepreneurs of the past century, right? And he didn't even show up to receive his award because he's like, dude, fuck that. Like, that doesn't matter. That literally doesn't matter. It's just an award. Yeah. All that shit, it's fleeting.
That's how I look at all my medals and ribbons and all that shit that they gave me when I came home. I'm just like, fuck this. Why? No.
You should be happy and grateful that you were able to achieve that. That's good stuff. But the thing is, you have to recognize it continues. It doesn't stop. You know, that's genuinely something that is great about you, is that you still have that sense of service in you. And you, when you hear someone else is struggling, you're ready to jump in with them.
It's just like you're back in combat mode. You just want to rush to them, be like, what can I do? How can I help? What do you need? You know, I can offer you a ride right now and a bottle of water or maybe a Coke. But other than that, what can I do?
How about an ear? How about a friend?
Yeah, right. Exactly.
That stuff.
And that's all it takes to, you know, take somebody for jumping that 1 second. Is just, hey, how are you? And just being pleasant about it.
Yeah, man. So question, this is actually a question we ask everybody that we get a chance to. The name of the podcast is For My Life. Mm-hmm. Okay. So it's FML, which usually means fuck my life. But in this case, it's for
pretty
my
much.
Life. So when was the moment that you recognized that you were for your life?
For my life. Oh man, for my life. Man, that's a challenge.
Take your time. No rush. Genuinely.
For my life is pretty much recently, about a month ago, when I was doing this church group called Starting Point, where you come together and a bunch of pretty much nobodies come together and be like, we're new in this group, we're new in this church, and we're coming together regardless. And it's not really like a church, is they don't recognize it as a building. They look at it as a fellowship in the people. You know, you could be in the church building or it could be in somebody's house, but it's everybody coming together with issues. And when they asked me to tell my story and I sat there and spoke for about 45 minutes, two individuals pretty much didn't want to speak because everybody had to pretty much tell them your story, regardless of how bad or good it is. And two individuals didn't want to speak till they kept putting it off till they heard my story. And that's when I was just like, started before my life, because me telling my story made these two other people comfortable of them telling their story, because they've been afraid to even speak out and they were the quiet type. It's like, hold on, this guy almost killed himself 2 months ago and he tried to do it in 2011 and failed, and some old lady found him, and that was me. And then trying to explain myself to this old lady while I was trying to hang myself. And once I told him that, then this other individual came out and be like, my life really wasn't that bad, because listen to him. Now I want to speak and tell people my story. And that's pretty much when I pretty much was just like, all right, telling my story, I feel like I'm, you know what I mean?
I do.
If that makes sense.
It does. Something that's really important to state. So one of my personal missions within ReFit is I'm trying to remind as many veterans as possible how important they are to the fabric of this entire society. Mm-hmm. Because it's a bunch of men and women who you guys have seen, so many of you, especially in this most recent generation, has seen so much combat, so much bullshit, whether, and not even just combat, you've been around just the military while in a war mode or a fight mode. And you know how difficult things can actually be in other countries and et cetera. And it's almost like we need to have this leadership back here at home, in and around the United States, all over the place, to remind people. And if you can find a way to be center and be clear and be strong within your own emotions and not let yourself get too high or too low and just stay nice and even, right? Especially in really difficult conversations, I really think you can see the fabric of this nation heal. So you doing what you did, thank God for you doing that and staying alive to share that, to allow those two people to heal up.
Yeah. Right?
To allow those two people to share something that they may not have shared before. You are the reason why I'm doing this. So thank you for sharing that you did that. That's fucking huge.
Thank you.
Purpose and service.
Yeah. I took the military as a joke until I went to Afghanistan. And I was just pretty much trying to find a way to make my E5 and this, that, and the other. And it was a challenge. And I took the Navy pretty much as a joke till that happened. And it took me pretty much the first time of me getting shot at to open up and be like, what the fuck? I've been in the Navy for 5 years. And pretty much I took it as a joke. I signed up to go to schooling so I can get out of feeding and being on a grill for a crew of 300 to feeding an old man. It took me signing up to be like, hey, send me to school so I miss a deployment so I could, you know, do something better. And it took me to pretty much get shot at to my eyes open and be like, holy fuck. What the fuck? I've been skating through my whole, now I have a mission. I have a purpose. You know, I'm with these 146 other people right now, and it's my job to actually keep these people safe. Because right when I first started, I was just like, it was a joke. So it's, I don't know if that makes sense. And it's just, that's when I start being like, man, I'm doing this for America. You know, we're trying to help these people. America's trying to help these poor people in Afghanistan. And we're trying to keep these civilian contractors and the engineers safe. Because they're trying to make another country better. We're trying to bring them up to the 20th century. And it took that moment of the first time I'm getting shot at to realize, holy shit, you know, I have a purpose here.
It's fantastic. Your purpose is still here, by the way.
Yeah.
Because to be honest with you, there's a lot of healing that needs to happen in this nation in general. And your story can absolutely help with that.
Exactly. People don't realize, you know, how pretty much good we got in America. Before I went to Afghanistan, I was in 36 other countries. You know, I saw Kenya and Somalia, and you're walking around, it's just like, holy shit, you say no to somebody in the street, they're going to beat the fuck out of you and steal all your stuff. The cops ain't going to do nothing. The government ain't going to do nothing about it. You know, you can't do that in America, and people in America are bitching about something in the street. And it's just like, if you're in Somalia or another country, you're going to get your ass beat or just killed.
Yeah.
And just spit on the street in Venezuela, then you're pretty much going to get taken away by the cops like that, thrown into the cell.
And it's, you know, those kind of stories, if they could be, and I hate to say it like this, but it's just the truth. If those kind of stories can be portrayed and delivered in a way that I hate to say softer, but in a softer, almost, you know who Jordan Peterson is? Almost in a, I'll just say like almost like a Jesus-like manner, right? Where you can be really clear and deliver it in a strong central tone of like, listen, you don't understand. And here, let me try to help you understand why, you know, we have it so good here and why this nation doesn't deserve to be shit on, you know, egregiously, right? Now, it's hard to do that because there's so much negative that is happening. And do you feel personally I'm being fucking real right now, and I want you not to take this next word victimized in a, I'm never a victim. No. Like, do you feel victimized by the way this nation's talked about at all?
Yeah, big time.
Okay.
you know, we're talked to, we're criticized every day.
What do you think? What do you think you could do at a local level for yourself and for the nation that you love?
I don't know. Probably speak out more. Just try to talk to people more. Tell them how good we got it.
Have conversations with people, but it's what you did already. You shared your story, and then two other people just understood you better at your church.
Yeah.
That's all you need to do. You don't have to go fucking save the world. You don't have to go speak in front. It's literally just having conversations with people like that.
Yeah, small conversations and just helping people open their eyes. And it, once you start talking, other people just feel comfortable about talking. And it's just, that was nice. And you're just being real with these people.
I think you should write. Ray is right. I think he knows how obsessed I am with that shit.
Yeah.
You should totally write these C stories, right? I mean, like, you need to write your stories. I totally agree with that. I mean, if you wanted to share it through Refit, we'll be a platform for you to share it through. We've done it for others.
I'd be happy to share everything because all those countries I've been to. I'd love to
have you join the fight in that way. Because honestly, man, like your story and your very obviously you just got home. Like, so welcome home, you know.
Yeah,
like,
recently.
Yeah, you recently just got home. Even though it's been years of you being on the soil, you literally just got home recently.
Yeah. Since 2010, so it's just,
14 years, right? So, welcome back.
I just got to keep it up, and that's the challenge, keeping it.
It's honestly going to be the biggest challenge is the discipline around, you know, staying home, you know? Yeah, and writing could absolutely help you do that because it'll ground you in putting things into the past for you. And honestly, your perspective on life as well is something that people need to hear because you didn't want to live at one point. And now you're like, wait a second, I am here for a reason. Like there is a reason why I failed back in 2011. And there's a reason why I failed 2 months ago. I need to seriously, you know, lean into this and write.
Yeah, it's like, what's my purpose? How can I help people? And then
you're doing it right now.
Yeah.
I'm not.
It's definitely. It's definitely a common factor I'm finding when we ask people, when we ask service men and women what their, the moment they found out they were for their life is, and I said it earlier is service and purpose. And I think that's like, I think that's a really important thing that we all have to find when we come home, right? When we get out, is we have to find a way to still serve and a purpose to carry on. I think that's ingrained in us when we get in there. If we don't have a mission or we're not of service or we don't have a purpose, then we feel useless, and that's when the demons start coming up. So, it's definitely a common denominator between everybody when we ask them. The moment they were for their life.
Yeah. Agree to that. It's all mission oriented. You find a new mission, you keep going because you have a reason. Because being in the military, regardless when I was fucking off or being in Afghanistan, it's just once you get that mission, regardless, this is my rank, this is what I got to do, and what do we have to do to succeed in this mission? What do we got? You got to, you know, go above and beyond. And that's it, you know. So I like that mission oriented. You know, this is my new mission of life. You know, I hate New York, but I'm here, so I got to make the best out of it. My mission is just keep speaking until I figure out what's next.
That's massive.
Yeah.
Do you know what's next yet?
I have no clue because I hate where I live. I pretty much came back here just because at the right time, somebody that I grew up with, we're friends since we're 8 years old.
Yep.
I haven't spoke to him in years. What's that?
Is he a civilian?
Yeah, he's a civilian.
I'm going to share something with you. Keep going.
No, we pretty much, I went through a hard time in my life when I was a little kid. I was 8 and my dad just passed away from cancer. And my mom threw me in sports because I was pretty much a mute. And he was one of those kids with Coke bottles, glasses that are like this thick. And I was first day of baseball. And this is how we became friends. We're sitting on the bench. His father was coach. Everybody's playing catch with each other. First day of practice, I'm sitting there feeling bad because my dad just died. My best friend being at 8, and I grew up in a little farming community, so the population was like 100 people. He's sitting on the opposite side of the bench. People are making fun of him because his glasses. His father comes up, just starts cussing at us. What the fuck are you guys doing? And it's just like, my dad just died. He's like, nobody wants to play with me, Dad, because my glasses. And he just started cussing at us. Get the fuck up and play catch with each other. That's when we became friends.
I love that shit, dude. Move! So,
like,
take action.
8 years old back in 1988. That's when we became friends. Yeah. And pretty much, I was living in Tennessee at the time, and I pretty much ran away from Florida to Tennessee because I met a woman that pretty much told me that she was going to give me the family I always wanted, the life I always wanted. But she was in showbiz, and she was a public figure for Nashville and CMT and all that stuff. So I threw away my life that I just developed in Florida, and it took me a while to figure it out. Then I was in Tennessee. Then I realized she kept me as a secret because she was afraid it was going to affect her job. The people she worked for was pretty much anti-Republican, and they're all about politics. So that's pretty much why she kept me quiet and hidden, because she was afraid that if I spoke to the wrong person or met the wrong person, her career was going to tank. And every time she went on the road, she was partying with other dudes. And I'm like, I can't do this life.
Yeah.
After 3 years of being a blur like that, I packed up my clothes and I was waiting till she came back. And I was like, what do I do with myself? I can't do this anymore.
What year was this?
This was 2 years ago, a year and a half ago, when I came back to New York. And I was just pretty much like, I'm done. I can't do this. I know I was living off the grid for a while when I came out of the military. That was a blur. I moved to Florida to be closer to my kids, and that was a blur. But then it became a nightmare because they have a rich stepfather that gave them everything. And they pretty much only reached out to me if they needed something. And it was just like, what do I do with myself? And then I met this girl, and I'm like, forget this. My kids only want me if they need something. Other than that, I'm a ghost. And I have too many nightmares, and I don't even know what's going on in Florida. So I chased a girl to Tennessee, and that all went to shit after 3 years. I'm like, I can't do this life anymore. And my friend from being 8 years old would be like, what are you doing, dude? I'm like, I don't know. I'm in a hotel room now, and I can't figure out what I'm going to fucking do. I'm just going to go find a park bench somewhere. And he's like, what the fuck? No, come back here. I'm like, where? Come back to New York. So I came back to New York. I slept on the sofa, and he's like, what the fuck, man? This is where you grew up. This is where you belong. And that's how I came back here a year and a half ago. But in my mindset, I'm not telling him the truth. I'm like, all right, this is a good place to die. So, you know, and now it's all, you know, my happy place is in the woods. My happy place is in waterfalls. My happy place is in the middle of nowhere. And my happy place is with this group of people that I found at church, or with a high school buddy that's a civilian. But he doesn't understand, like, the concept of war. And
here's what I would like to offer, a couple things. One, it sounds like you're beginning to slip back into a really negative space again in your head.
Yeah.
So let's put a pause on that real quick. Number two, your boy. We have this program in Project Refit. I'm just going to share the screen, actually, so everybody can see this. It's important.
Oh, you're good.
It's actually very important. It's something we don't talk about a lot that I think we should talk about more, because it's the modern veteran comes home. You already mentioned it. Your guys, all of you are spread all throughout the United States, right?
Yeah.
And that is that's difficult. That's a difficult thing to experience. And you go home, and there's guys in your community that you haven't, that have never served, like your buddy, right?
Yeah. So
we developed this thing, and they don't understand necessarily. Well, we developed this thing called the Friend Bridge Program. So nominate a civilian friend you want to attend with you.
Yeah.
If your support system, this is literally you, is a civilian friend, mention him or her when you reach out to us, and we'll bring them out. We pay for them the same as you. Everything's paid for a retreat. They would come along with you, and we pay for everything. So they can actually understand what it is that you saw, a little bit more about the military culture, how things are viewed, all that shit. So, and you saw that, right? It popped up on the screen.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
So that is what I would recommend you and your buddy look into together, to come out on a retreat with us together.
Definitely.
And because he is your family, it sounds like, big time. Yeah.
He's the one that keeps me going sometimes. And it's just, he's like an angel on my shoulder, because it's weird because we go weeks without hearing from each other because he's pretty much started his own business. He's in his 40s and they have a 3-year-old, and it's just, so he's busy and he's got his hands full. And I understand why, but every now and then when I get to a dark place, it's just weird because he's like, hey, what are you doing? Let's go get coffee at 10 o'clock at night. So it's just weird how he pops up like that.
He knows.
So it's pretty much.
So do me a favor, man. Talk to him and ask him if he'd like to do it. Talk to his wife, his kid. He has a 3-year-old, you said?
Yeah, 3-year-old.
So let's see if we can, because it's hard to get away from a family like that, right?
Yeah, it is, because it's...
Especially when they're not used to deployments and stuff. A military family's used to the...
They're not used to being away from each other.
Exactly. The military family, they're used to the husband or the wife being away for a little while, and it's something... Yeah. Oh, just a week or just 5 days. It's like, that's nothing.
That's nothing. I'm like, that...
But for a civilian family, that's a lot. So I think that... Like Claire actually is saying, you know, she said, I love this, hands down, such a huge help, and having others help understand where you're coming from. And it's true. It could help out significantly with your buddy and understanding where you are and what it is to serve and the sacrifices that were made. I mean, that kind of shit's critical. So I would love to offer that and extend a hand to that. Right. When it comes to, you know, surviving or living and finding a purpose again. I mean, do you have a job or anything like that?
Yeah, I do. I got a job through a temp agency. So it's not like career oriented. It's a job to bring income in so I can pay off the debt and the bills I got. But it's like trying to find a career. Everybody's like, what do you want to do? It's just like, I don't even know. And then I tell them what I want to do. It's like, oh, you got to go to college for that. Or you got to do this for that. And it's just like, I'm in my mid 40s. So it's just like, that's why I said I've been through like 38 jobs in the past 14 years. And it's just, you blink and next thing I know, and working for civilians is not like the military. It's just like the structure. It's just a pain in the ass. And it's just like, people don't understand that either. And civilian employment don't understand. And they're just like, oh, you're a veteran, we'll hire you like that. But then you go there and the structure's all FUBAR. And it's just like, hold on a second. What? No. And it's just like, when we start working for them, we become, you know, the only one working, and everybody's mooching off of us, and they start slacking off because we're mission oriented. It's like, what do we got to do? Get through the day. You got to do this, this, and this. And then we go above and beyond. It's like, we take breaks. I don't want to take a break. I'm going to keep going until the day is done. You know, I just drink coffee or water while I eat snacks while I go. And then other civilians see that and they take advantage of you and they're just start doing less and less work. And it's just, that pisses you off. I've seen that happen too much. And it's just like, yeah.
So you feel pretty victimized.
Pretty much.
How do you think you'd be able to get yourself out of that mind space?
I don't know. It's just like, it's a challenge. And it's just trying to find work these days is a challenge. Everybody's hiring, but then you look at, it's a little more than minimum wage, or you're going to work 90 hours a week? Are you going to work overnights? And there's just like, are you going to work swing shift? 1 week you're working days, 1 week you're working nights. And you know, in the military, you didn't flinch about that because you had a mission. So it's just like, all right, I'll sleep for 15 minutes this day. I sleep for 2 hours this day. You didn't care. But working for civilian people, and it's just, I just don't know how to explain it. And it's just how they talk to you. It's just like, what? No. And it's like the level of respect in the civilian workforce, it's just, it's not there. You know, you used to have a sergeant or a chief, you know, giving you orders, or then you become that petty officer or that sergeant giving orders, and it's completely different because the respect given, the respect received is completely different than these civilian people. And it's just like, what the F, you know? And that's what, you know, even though I only did 7 years, still that 7 years is, that's a structure where I learned from right after high school, that's a structure of respect received and given. And then showing up, you know, not looking like a shitbag, you know, you wear whatever you want, but you're still squared away in your appearance, you know, and then people come just wearing their PJs and disrespecting everybody. It's just like, how do they do this? And it's like, well, we need employees, so we deal with it. It's like, that just pisses you off too. So I left a job because of that a while ago. I'm just like, what the F? No, I can't be around somebody that's going to keep disrespecting management. And they don't give a crap, and they show up when they want to show up, but they need a body to fill, so they're there. So I'm like, I can't be part of a company like this.
That's fair. Have you looked for veteran-owned companies?
Yeah, it's where I'm at. It's not to knock New York because I'm in a small town where people actually care about each other, but I'm pretty much in a not really a veteran-oriented place, if that makes sense.
It doesn't, but that's okay.
I'm in New York, so it's run by, I hate to use a liberal aspect, you know, anti-veteran, more about immigrants and stuff like that. I don't like talking about politics, but you know.
I understand. I get it now. So, I wonder if there's something that we could help out with there. We don't really find jobs for people, but.
Well, I know. I tried to, Wounded Warrior program was trying to help me, but the location where I'm at, that's why I said, yes, I'll relocate. I'll go anywhere in the States, you know, it's where I'm at. Cause the Wounded Warrior program has a good talk program that I used a few times before, and they have a good resource where they help employment, but they're located in ventured communities all over the United States. And I'm in one of those places where the closest resource is like 3 or 4 hours away. So I'm in like a place where it's secluded enough, and you know, we have a VFW, but there's 3 people in it. And we have a vet center, but it's civilians trying to help veterans, but they don't really understand veterans, if you know what I mean.
That's a topic for another time, but
yeah,
we'll definitely talk about that offline here, and we'll see if we can find something for you. But when it comes down to mission and purpose, man, I think that you have a lot more to give, and you do have a lot more that you can share with the world. And I think that a lot of veterans don't really understand just how much they have to give. Hang on. What about using the New York Department of Labor SEAP program, SEAP program?
I tried doing the Department of Labor. I'm not sure what the SEAP program is, but then the few jobs they found me working at, I didn't want to sit in a warehouse, if that makes sense. And I don't want to be the guy holding another job they try to help me find. A guy standing on the road. What's that?
Self-Employment Assistance Program.
That I don't know. I got to look into that. But I contacted the Department of Labor because they have a little veteran representative. And they gave me a list of jobs like that. But then I was just like, I didn't want to, you know, be the guy holding the stop sign in the construction zone going like this. And I didn't want to be a guy working in a warehouse. I tried that twice and I just... You know, time goes by like this, but the warehouse atmosphere just couldn't do it, if that makes sense. But I got to look at the SEAP program. I didn't know what that is. I got to look into that.
Self-Employment Assistance Program. Because from what you're saying, you're having a hard time, like, taking orders from people that don't have rank. And there's a lot of really successful veterans that become entrepreneurs, like super successful, because understanding structure and understanding, you know, standard operating procedures, how to develop them, how to operate by them, how to develop a true structured, you know, program. It's something vets understand because they operate within the biggest bureaucracy in the world, which is the DOD. And that's legit. They are the largest bureaucracy in the world. You know, it is, bureaucracies to me are a nightmare, but you know, when they're that big, you know, you kind of do need to have some type of structure, right? And following appropriate, I guess, laws, procedures, things like that, you know, how you can do it. You've done it before. So I think that's why Ray is throwing that out there, reading between the lines there with you. You know, for me, it sounds like you need to do something, get moving, do you have a job now? You said that you do?
Yeah, I do. I answer phones for a plumbing company.
Okay.
A temp agency.
Are you trying to become a plumber eventually?
No. I don't want to be that guy known with the crack, you know, identify somebody by the crack, you know. I'm good.
Hey man, there's nothing wrong with that job.
Yeah, I know that it's not for me. I fell in love recently. I never really appreciate Mother Nature till I moved to New York and I realized I'm surrounded by it. And I've just been trying to figure out how to become either a park ranger or work in a state park or this, that, and the other. And the ones in New York that I tried to, and they're like, you don't have pretty much a diploma that says I could work in a state park. I don't have that eco degree or that echo degree or stuff they're talking about.
Two things. Yeah. Where are you in New York?
Pretty much 30, 40 minutes west of Albany, probably about 2.5 hours north of New York City, right in the base of the Helderberg Mountains.
Okay.
A lot of people don't know where that is.
Well, Mike Santoro is asking. And number two, are you eligible for your GI? Like you're able to get your benefits?
I use part of that. I used most of it pretty much back in the day, right when I first got out. I used it pretty much. I tried to increase my culinary, background. But once I was in culinary school and I had chefs yelling and screaming at me, I lost my cool and I got out of that program. And then I tried to take some HVAC classes. And then I was just like, because when I was living in Florida, HVAC is the way to go, heating and AC and stuff like that. But I barely got through math class. And then I realized after 6 months of that, it's all math and science. And I was just like, I only wanted to pursue and go to school this because I'm in Florida and the high demand for HVAC to, tax, they start at 50 grand a year. But once I realized it was all math and science for the heating and the cooling in each room and the zones, I lost it. I was like, I had to withdraw. I'm just like, I can't deal with this. So I used pretty much at least 50% of my GI Bill to stuff that I realized I can't do this in the civilian life. Mm-hmm. And it took me till I was 42 to realize, shit, how do I go to school for this? But my GI Bill is half gone, a little more than half gone.
So we have a guy saying, if you're interested in surveillance, this is Mike. We do workers' comp investigations all over the East Coast and are hiring in your area. That sounds pretty fucking cool. Ray said vocational rehab, VRE.
Yeah, I tried that. And they pretty much shot me down. I went to them twice. Because the first time I went.
How long ago did you do this?
2000. VRE, I tried. It used to be vocational rehab. Now it's VRE. I tried in 2018 and 19 before COVID. The first time I went there, I didn't have a plan. And they want you to have a plan what you want to go to school for and what you're going to do and jobs and pretty much. And the first time I went there, I was just like, I went to college for this and this and I failed. What can I do? I want to go back to school, but I only have, 9 months of my GI Bill left. And they're just like, you don't have a plan, get out. And then I had to reapply. I came up with a plan and they didn't take me serious because they said, use your GI Bill for this and this, and you didn't get anything out of it. So we're not going to invest in you and give you any more college experience because you tried two things and you didn't use anything of it. I'm like, well, I passed everything. I was even on the dean's list once. And they're like, we don't care about that. You went to school twice. You used half of your GI Bill on two different things. And I was just like, yeah, but I know what I want to do now. And they didn't want to hear that. And they told me, well, you can reapply and come back. And I was just like, but that was 2019.
Try again.
Yeah.
That's bullshit.
And when you apply, you have to go on eBenefits and apply, and it takes 6 months before your approval. And then they schedule for a counselor, and then you come in with your plan. So that's why I never tried again since then.
I would try again. And we're going to get Mike Santoro's email, and we're going to connect you with him directly. How's that sound? Is that cool?
That sounds perfect. I appreciate it.
And I agree with Ray. I'm going to say it one more time. That is bullshit. I would definitely try again. Yeah.
But it goes back to the VA system. So,
finding home to help foot the bill, medical hospital, what specific interest do you have? Yeah, that's old school shit, to be honest with you. That isn't, you have to get a job first before companies foot any bills to go to school. That's That takes months and months and months. All right, we'll figure this shit out. Ray said he just did it, 2-month process. So, Ray, would you be willing? I know, I already know the answer, but would you be willing to talk to Ben here? Ray is a fucking stud. I'm sure he would be willing to talk to you and talk you through things.
Sounds like I'm open to any kind of help.
Yeah. Yep. Ray is actually, he's actually one of our new up and coming peer leaders here at Refit too. Nice. So he is usually more than willing to talk to anybody to help him out. Yeah, I will. I'll send him your number then. All right, we'll do that. We'll connect the two of you guys. So you got Mike Santoro and Ray that we're going to connect you with. Listen, this was a fucking badass episode. It's really good to get to know you. Good to get to know your story a little bit. I'm sure we'll get to know you more. Really want to bring you out on a retreat sometime.
That sounds like a plan.
Including your buddy.
That's going to be the challenge, but I'm going to try.
Yeah, well, we can give him months in advance notice. You know, we have shit coming up in August, July, August, September, October. So we have stuff coming up, you know, throughout the year. So we'll talk to you more about that. We have a couple contacts we're going to put you in touch with here who might be able to help you out a little bit. We're going to stay in touch with you. We hope you stay in touch with us.
Definitely. And if you guys ever want to chat again, doors open. Let's go.
Cool, man. We also have every Monday and Friday, we have peer support groups that we host online. You know, we have those retreats that I mentioned. Also, if there's ever anything you wanted to do in your area, like you wanted to do a fundraiser in your area for Project Refit through your church, with your church, to help us out, which in turn would help you out, you know, then let's do it. That'd be great too. You know, we're looking to really expand our footprint throughout the United States now and bring this positive message of like, yo, your story matters. You are a leader. You have to fucking remember that. You know, it is literally for the fabric of our society. You have to remember that. And you can do more, even if it's just local, right? Not even if it is. That's where it starts. Everything is local. Yeah. You know, you have to take care of yourself for sure, as Claire just said. So, yeah, man, we're here for you. We're here with you. Welcome to the family.
Thank you.
And this is seriously a great story and a great episode. So, that's it. Let's do it. I'll talk to you soon, everybody. We're going to sign off. Don't hang up yet, Ben. We're going to talk.
Sounds good.
But yeah. All right. Thank you everybody for tuning in with us.
Thanks everybody.
17 minutes, but we got to talk to Ben. And thank you again, everyone.